Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, a marathon in Antarctica.
That one was amazing. I mean, what I would say, and the magazine and iRun.ca, the article I wrote for Ben, it was, you know, I went to run a marathon and discovered Antarctica. So it's really one of those places where I tell anyone who has any interest in it to say, you know, make the point of going.
Explaining a new world record in the marathon.
To have someone run a 201, you know, 201.39, was totally unprecedented. And like you said, that, you know, in the bigger context of things, if this had been like, oh, he ran 206 and two, instead of 207, oh my God, there still would have been a big record. But because we're getting so close to this this big two-hour threshold, it just it makes things different. It's exciting that we're now knocking on the door of something that I personally, I wrote a big article for Runner's World in 2014, and I predicted 2075 is when we'd see a two-hour marathon. So it's totally upending our understanding of what's possible.
And why one runner will race Toronto dressed as a battery.
It was probably about a year ago, my wife, Sarah, said, hey, you know, we should go run the Toronto Marathon. So we've been planning to go down to run the marathon for some time. And initially I was like, oh, do I want to just, you know, just run this as a regular marathon? Or, you know, and I was browsing through the website on the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, and they had a list of all the Guinness World Records, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll just check and see if there's anything interesting there that would stand out, and as a way to raise awareness for mitochondrial disease. So I thought, well, my initial thought was batteries. The mitochondria is like the batteries of our cells, and I thought it's a really good analogy and a simple way to help people understand the role of the mitochondria.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll talk to a runner who has completed marathons around the world, including in Antarctica. A few weeks ago, Eliud Kipchoge set a new world record in the marathon, and he didn't just break the record, he shattered it, shaving more than a minute off the previous best time. We are going to talk to author and blogger Alex Hutchinson about exactly how he did it. And we're going to tell you the powerful story of the CEO of Mito Canada, who's been part of some world records of his own. And he's going to run the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon next weekend dressed as a battery. There's a specific reason he's doing that, and we will tell you that story coming up. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, I am feeling good. I am feeling great. Race day for me is approaching.
Yeah, you're doing the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon in a week, and then, what, 3 weeks after that, you're doing the New York City Marathon, right?
That's right. I am a glutton for either punishment or glory. I'm not sure which one. Well, yeah. We shall find out.
Yeah. And I'm coming off the Chicago Marathon last weekend, which was a lot of fun. Thank you. Yeah, it went extremely, extremely well, and I was very happy with it. I felt strong in the second half of the race, which isn't always the case with a marathon. I never got to that point where you're feeling like, oh my God, when is this going to be over? How am I going to get to the next kilometer marker, let alone the finish line? I was actually speeding up in the final 10K, so
wow.
It felt great. What
do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I mean, it was another rainy day. So, you know, as I was running, I was thinking of you and our experience in Boston. And I was thinking, I guess this is my year for big city wet marathons, right?
Because
it rained pretty heavily in the first 10K, but then it cleared up. I think the fact that I didn't take it too fast in the first half was probably part of it. I think my endurance is a little bit better than it was in the past. You know, I'm a little bit lighter than I was before, so maybe these marathons don't take as much of a toll on my body as they used to. I don't know. It's always death by a thousand cuts or whatever the positive opposite of that is, right? It's a bunch of variables. It's never one thing.
Yeah. Well, that is incredible. I mean, that is such a good feeling. Congratulations. I mean, there's nothing better than with 10K to go. I had that when we did Boston. I had that where, like, you know, I was rocking at 35K. And, you know, that feeling is just, I've been on the other side of that too.
Yeah,
so,
sure. More times than not. I obviously it was getting harder. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't
a
walk in the park, I was feeling like, wow, I can do this. You're always worried that the bottom's going to drop out at any second, but I still felt,
Let's not talk about that.
This is a good finish. So, And then the best thing was I get to the finish line and I cross the finish line and there's, you know, there you walk for a little bit and then they give you a bottle of water or something. And then you walk for a bit and they give you a foil blanket and then they give you your medal. And the woman who's there about to give me my medal, I look at her and it's Dina Castor,
wow.
The American Olympian.
Cool.
Yeah. As bronze medalist in the Olympics and legendary marathoner in the States. And she's handing me my medal. And I said, what? Is it really you? Am I imagining this? And she said, yeah, it's me. And I said, this is an incredible honor. And she said, oh, the honor's mine. You're the one who just ran a marathon.
Wow.
You know,
wow. What
good job. Yeah.
Isn't running great? I mean, she's just, and that's like a person, like, kind of off the clock. Like, she's just nice like that. Like,
yeah.
Just to say that, like, on her, you know, where she's not, you know, her sponsors aren't watching her. She's not selling a book. She's not, she just acted like that and just spoke like that. And just, that's the nicest thing I've ever heard anybody say. You know, the honor's all mine. You just ran a, like, but it's, that's great.
I know.
It's the, such the spirit of the thing.
And that's the thing about running. You and I have said this a million times before, but you see people at their best, and it is a great community. And, you know, there are loads of other sports where you would not see an elite figure from the sport standing at the finish line or on the side of the court or the ice or the field.
Yeah.
Handing out medals to ordinary everyday participants in the sport. You know, you don't
you
don't go to your pickup softball game and you know, when the championship is awarded, Mike Trout of the Anaheim Angels is there to hand out the trophy. You know, that just doesn't happen. Nothing against Mike Trout, you know, but that just doesn't happen. So
threw Mike Trout under the bus just for no reason.
I like Mike Trout. Yeah. But it's just not the way that it works. But it does work that way in running. And that's one of the great things about it. Yeah. Well, I want to wish you the very best of luck in Toronto, Ben. I know you're going to rock it. And, of course, we've got lots of stuff happening at the Expo in Toronto. And we've got a new issue out, which looks fantastic. Reed Coolset is on the cover. And we talked last week about how awesome that picture looks. And, yeah, it's great to have him on the show because he's going to be on next week, in fact, the day of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. He'll be with us. So, and he'll tell the story of how that picture came together, which is kind of cool. So I want you to have a great race and enjoy it. I hope you feel as good as I did in the second half of your race.
Well, thank you. Congratulations, my friend, and everybody listening. Good luck to you wherever you are. Enjoy your run.
All right, good stuff. Ben, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, running a marathon in Antarctica. The Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon is coming on October 21st. Your spot is still available in the 5K, half marathon, or marathon. Join thousands of other runners and race against some of the best in the world, including iRun contributors Reed Coolset and Krista Duchesne. Visit iRun at our booth at the STWM Expo and join one of the best running events in the world. Our first guest this week has run marathons all over the world, including a recent race in Antarctica. Corey Williams, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
What made you decide you wanted to run a marathon on every continent?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll give you the short version. I'd run marathons on three continents by this point, and I was living in Europe, and I was running a marathon in Milan. And I was running behind a guy, an American guy, as it turns out. He had 50 plus DC on the back of his shirt. So I thought I'd start talking to him. And, you know, as you probably know, a lot of marathon runners, they're social, but when you're running a marathon, you're not necessarily striking up chit-chat. But anyways, yeah. I couldn't resist, and I started asking about his shirt. And he told me he'd run all 50 states plus DC, plus he'd done all the major sites. He was listing off all the places he'd run. Plus, he'd also run all seven continents. And I said, well, of all those things that he's done, I said, I think seven continents is much more achievable than some of the things that this amazing runner had achieved. So that was really where it started. But I suppose I was halfway there when I decided to make it my goal.
Yeah. So what marathons had you run at that point?
So my first marathon, I ran the Sydney Marathon in 2001 after Olympics when I was living in Australia. And that's a whole story in itself. You know, your first marathon and all the things you're not prepared for. Then I moved back to Canada and, actually strangely enough, even though I'm Canadian, I'm from Alberta, I've only run one marathon in Canada. That was Kelowna in British Columbia. And then I ended up moving back to Europe for a while, and that was really a big running boom for me. So in the 8 years I lived there, I ran 12 marathons, and that's really, you know, where the whole seven continents goal came from. And then I came back, and I had a few more to chip off, a couple more, which was Japan and Antarctica, which were my last two after moving back to Canada in 2016.
Okay. And so when you were in Europe, you ran 12 marathons in 8 years. In what kind of places?
All sorts of variety. I mean, some of the big ones like London, Paris, Madrid, Amsterdam, Milan, Edinburgh, Stockholm.
Wow.
Some small ones, which are interesting, like San Sebastian, which is quite interesting. Dusseldorf, which is very flat and fast, which was actually... As a sub story there, that was my first Boston qualifier. So that was 10 years and 10 marathons to qualify for Boston.
Good for you. And so, it helps that you've lived on a few different continents. That's part of the story here, too, I guess.
It makes it a bit easier. Yeah exactly.
Yeah. And what about Africa? I think you said you ran in Japan, so that would cover off Asia. What about Africa?
So Africa was Morocco, and that's a funny story. So I had I'd convinced my wife, my daughter had just been born, and we should go to Marrakesh to run that marathon. And she was very worried about it. Shall we say, we got some spirited conversations about our daughter getting sick in Africa. And anyways, as it turned out, I got food poisoning, my wife got food poisoning, and my in-laws, who also came along, they also got food poisoning. So everyone got food poisoning except for my daughter. And I didn't run Marrakesh, even though I had the logistics organized where the hotel we're staying at was, you know, meters from the start finish line, et cetera, et cetera. So that was a bust in Marrakesh. And then I went back, I think, about 10 months later and ran their other big marathon in Morocco in Casablanca.
Casablanca. That's kind of a cool setting for a marathon.
It was very good, yeah.
And I guess that time you were a little more careful about what you ate.
I was a bit more particular. I was at a five-star Western hotel in Marrakesh, and I thought I could go for the salad bar, and that turned out to be a mistake.
Okay, wow, good lesson there. So how many marathons have you done in total?
17 so far.
All right, 17, and yet you've included in that you've done all of the seven continents.
Correct.
Yeah, and you've done many, many different countries. So you've chosen widely and wisely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and the only marathon I've run twice is Boston. So
okay.
Or more than once, you could say.
Yeah. Tell me about the experiences you've had in some of these places. Are there any that stand out, or are there any that you would highly recommend that are among your favorites?
Well, there's a few. I mean, every marathon has something very unique to offer, and you know, for example, I don't know, I think some of the big ones, London's amazing in the spirit of the race. I mean, obviously it's very historic and there's a big elite field, but I would say one of the most amazing thing about it is that everyone really gets into it. There's a lot of people that, you know, dress up in costume, as they say, and, you know, in the UK, fancy dress. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of people raising a lot of money for charity. And the other thing that's interesting there that you don't see many other places, it's quite typical for the vast majority of people to get their names on their tops, and so everyone is really shouting your name, which not all our marathons do. So that's pretty amazing. Paris is huge, and you know, it's very famous for some of the sites you see. But I think, and that probably goes for a lot of the European marathons, you're running in, really spectacular places that have a lot of history. So, and each place has something a little bit different to offer in some respects. And some are bigger and smaller. Still very, very big, but not London or Paris. And some places like Amsterdam, which is, you know, I don't know, about 15,000 people running that one. Call that a medium-sized marathon, so...
Yeah, very cool. And so obviously this journey took you to Antarctica, which is not a place that people travel to very often. But they do have a marathon there expressly so that you can complete the seven continents experience. So tell me a little bit about that one.
That one was amazing. I mean, what I would say, and the magazine and iRun.ca, the article I wrote for Ben, it was, you know, I went to run a marathon and discovered Antarctica. So, it's really one of those places where I tell anyone who has any interest in it to say, you know, make the point of going. It's not easy to get to. It's not cheap to get there. So for us, it was a group called Marathon Tours organizes the one I did, where we convene as a group in Buenos Aires, then fly down to Ushuaia on the southern tip of South America and Argentina. And from there, we caught our ship, which is, even though they actually had two ships, so they each have roughly about 100 passengers on them. And the ships itself are very interesting, that they're Finnish-built Russian, quote-unquote, research boats that were built to map the Arctic prior to the fall of the Berlin Wall during the Cold War. But two things happened. Obviously, the Cold War ended, and the technology moved on. So one boat was a signal receiving boat, or it was receiving. The other was a signal sending boat. So the crew they're all Russians from Kaliningrad, and that itself is a kind of interesting story, where everyone kind of running the boat are Russians. But the staff that we interact with is a group out of Vancouver called One Oceans. So people, you know, these are Canadians, Americans, Europeans, Australians, et cetera, mostly Westerners who we're interacting with on a day-to-day basis. But so that's kind of set the stage for life on the boat. But the other interesting thing is, to get to Antarctica, you've got to cross the Drake Passage. And if you know anything about the Drake Passage, I mean, those are some of the roughest seas in the world, which is about 2 to 3 days from the time you leave the tip of South America to when you reach landfall in Antarctica.
So what was that like? Was it rough? Did you get seasick?
I got a little bit seasick, but we were quite lucky. So the joke is, it's either the Drake Lake or the Drake Shake, and so you want the Drake Lake is really what you're hoping for. And when we were down, going the way down, they said it was about a 4 out of 10. It wasn't that bad. So some people are like, you know, you got to find your sea legs and all that, and a lot of people have motion sickness tablets, ear patches, etc. But it actually was quite refreshing, because the other thing that you are is, for that time you're on the boat, you're off the grid. There's no internet, so you're actually talking with people. You're playing cards. You're playing board games. You know, other runners who are just socializing. So it was that was actually refreshing. It was that was very unique, and obviously everyone's kind of keen to get there and run. And then obviously we make landfall. The day after we make landfall, we run the marathon, and that, you know, obviously there's a whole story in itself of the marathon. But then the day after, you know, you're out on the water, you're kayaking with whales, you're interacting with wildlife. It's, you know, it's a majestic kind of backdrop. So for me, it was a great experience running it, but it really highlighted what an amazing place Antarctica is in terms of how remote and pristine it is.
Yeah. And what was the run like?
The run was very interesting. So, I mean, a lot of people talk about it, but I would say the one advantage of being a Canadian living in Canada, preparing is kind of ideal preparation. So it was in March. Actually, this year for us, it was on St. Paddy's Day. So it was probably about, I don't know, minus 10 or a little bit below minus 10 Celsius when we started. And then probably got up closer to just below freezing by the time we finished. But what we did on that course, we're running between research bases. I could describe it to people as, you're basically running on dirt trails that are kind of frozen, that, you know, there's vehicles. So we're running from the Russian base past the Chilean base to the Chinese base, and that was the turnout. So it was a 6-lap route of an out and back. So each out and back lap was about 4 miles and change.
And now
for the marathon.
Yeah, now you've done the 7 continents. You've checked that box that arose out of a conversation you had during a marathon way back when. What's next?
Good question. Negotiate with my wife first of all. But the two things that really stick out for me, and this is, you know, you get inspiration from other runners, and this is what, you know, how I got to my 7 continents. Is to maybe finish all the 6 majors, so that I've got 4 more to go on that. And the other one for me is a personal thing. As a Canadian, I would love to do a marathon in all 10 provinces and 3 territories.
Very cool. You've got some other options in front of you, and
yes.
And they, like this one, you know, they're challenges, but they are within reach, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you realize it's achievable, and you. along each of those journeys, you get some sort of unexpected, pleasant surprises.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Corey. That's great stuff. And I congratulate you, and I wish you the best as you continue this journey. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
No problem. Thanks, Mark.
That's Corey Williams, who recently completed a marathon in Antarctica. Coming up next, how was Eliud Kipchoge able to take a minute and 18 seconds off the world marathon record a few weeks ago in Berlin? The Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon is coming on October 21st. Your spot is still available in the 5K, half marathon, or marathon. Join thousands of other runners and race against some of the best in the world, including iRun contributors Reed Coolset and Krista Duchesne. Visit iRun at our booth at the STWM Expo and join one of the best running events in the world. At the Berlin Marathon just a few weeks ago, Eliud Kipchoge set a new world record in the marathon, 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds. That was more than a minute faster than the previous record, and it has people buzzing about the prospect of someone running a marathon in less than 2 hours. To break down how Kipchoge did it and to talk about what it means, we have reached author and blogger Alex Hutchinson, whose latest book is called Endure. Alex, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about this world record, and can you put it in perspective? The margin by which it was broken is significant, and the fact that we are now closing the gap on 2 hours, something that there was some debate not so long ago about whether we'd ever get close to that or cross that threshold, now it almost makes it seem inevitable. I know there's still a lot of time to be gained here, but tell us, how significant do you think this accomplishment was last month?
Yeah, this is a different scale of world record breaking from what we've seen in the last. Actually, it's the biggest margin of world record in over 50 years, and it's for the men's world record in the marathon. So it's a minute and 18 seconds. The previous world record was 2:02:57. Dennis Kometo had just dipped under 2:03, and so this idea, could someone else get into the 2:02s? It's what I set my alarm. I woke up at 4 a.m. to watch this race in Berlin because I thought someone else might finally run a 2:02. So then to have someone run a 2:01, 2:01:39, was totally unprecedented. And like you said, in the bigger context of things, if this had been like, oh, he ran 2:06 instead of 2:07, oh my God, there still would have been a big record. But because we're getting so close to this big two-hour threshold, it makes things different. It's exciting that we're now knocking on the door of something that I personally, I wrote a big article for Runner's World in 2014, and I predicted 2075 is when we'd see a two-hour marathon. So it's totally upending our understanding of what's possible.
Right, 2075. So you and I wouldn't have even been around to find out if your prediction was true.
I eat very healthfully, and I'm doing a lot of exercise, so I was hoping I might still be around in 2075, but it would have been a long shot.
Yeah. So how did he do it? And this Eliud Kipchoge, of course, is someone you've seen up close and personal because you covered the event in Europe where he tried to go under 2 hours under some very different circumstances from a marathon like Berlin. What do you think went into this performance by Kipchoge in Berlin?
I think the mental side was enormous. So as you mentioned this Breaking 2 race that he took part in where Nike spent tens of millions of dollars and tried to orchestrate a sort of perfect marathon that wasn't under world record conditions. It had some artificial assistance like extra pacemakers. He ran 2 hours, 0 minutes, 25 seconds there. And to me, I think that experience was a big factor, that it changed his concept of what was possible in a marathon. So he was more willing to just go out there, and he ran the first half in just over 61 minutes. I don't think he could have done that had he not had this experience. So I think there was a mental breakthrough element that he changed his perspective. The other thing is he was wearing these shoes, the Vaporfly 4%, which supposedly make you 4% more efficient relative to the best other shoes on the market that Nike has been marketing. And there's, it's pretty clear that they don't really make you 4% faster. Otherwise, we'd have to assume that Kipchoge was really only a 2:06 marathoner or something. But that is another unanswered question, is how much did the shoes help Kipchoge get faster? And I think we said, it may well be that this is one of these technological breakpoints where, when fiberglass pole vaults were introduced in the 1950s, it changed the pole vault. So maybe
the shoes are part of it. And then the third thing is, I just think Kipchoge's, you know, certainly the greatest marathoner of his generation, maybe the greatest marathoner ever. So I think we're just lucky to be seeing a remarkably talented athlete.
And when we talked before about that breaking two attempt in Italy, you talked about his mental makeup. Tell us a little bit more about that, because he seems like the right guy to be breaking these records. Just there's just something about his outlook and his mindset that contributes to this as well, isn't there?
Totally. Yeah, you know, and as you said, I met him in the lead up to this breaking two race. I met him 6 months before the race. He had just run a half marathon, a little bit under 1 hour. And so I asked him, like, Elliot, you're going to have to go twice as far, basically the same pace here. You know, how are you going to change your training to try and, run 2 hours in this breaking two race? And he said, oh, I'm not going to change my training. My training is going to be the same, but my mind is going to be different. And at the time, my reaction at the time was, well, that sounds like a terrible plan. That'll never work. But in hindsight, as time has gone on and as I've had more opportunities to speak with him and to see his results, I think he has a unique mental approach that kind of accomplishes a lot of the things that modern sports psychologists have been trying to do, are trying to train other people to do. I think he naturally has a mindset that gives him very strong self-belief that, I'm sure before this marathon last week, he was telling himself, I'm ready to run 201. And he wasn't just telling himself that. He was believing that. And as sort of squishy as that seems, I actually think that had an impact.
Yeah, and as you say, going back to what you said earlier about the first element of this, the fact that he actually ran a marathon in 2 hours, 0 minutes, and 25 seconds, even though the conditions were different, the circumstances were different, the exercise was unique, it wasn't a race, it wasn't Berlin. In spite of that, he still knew he could run that fast. He could travel that distance in that time. And given what we know about psychology and sports psychology in particular, that had to be an advantage going into the Berlin Marathon.
Yeah, Nike ran an ad campaign after the Breaking 2 race with Kipchoge, who is a remarkable and sort of also a funny, deadpan, humorous kind of guy. And it was one of these sort of inspirational, soundtracks in the background with a voiceover, Kipchoge's voiceover saying, people say running a world record is very hard and that it's almost impossible to do. And how can anyone run that fast? I say, it's slower than my PB. So he had this attitude that, yes, he understands that breaking two wasn't a world record, but he also understood that his legs could go that fast. And I think that was helpful.
Yeah. And what does that teach us? Because so much of what we talk about when it comes to running and to performance and sport is physical, but it often is the mental barrier that we need to cross in order to get to another level, isn't it?
Yeah. And, people have been saying that for a long time, but I never fully believed it. I never, I was always much more fixated on VO2 max and how many intervals should you do and what's your pace. And that experience of following Kipchoge and for this Break 2 project, it actually kind of shifted my perspective. And I really think that is an important role. Like we were saying, if you want to run a 201 marathon, it's not just that you have to run a 201 marathon. You have to have the faith in yourself, the belief to go out and run the first half at that pace. And very few people, regardless of their physical characteristics, have that. And I think that's something that's transferable to that we can all think about. Whatever the pace you're going out to run or whatever the goals you're setting, if the goals are too low, you're kind of putting a ceiling on your possibility of accomplishing that, because you're never going to achieve. I mean, maybe if you go out slow, you're going to pick it up a little bit, but fundamentally, you're never going to achieve much more than you've set out to achieve. And that doesn't mean you can do anything you set out to achieve just by believing it, but it does, I think, underline the role that the goal setting and belief and motivation and internal monologue, the sort of messages we give ourselves, the role that those things play.
Now, having said all of that, it is possible that this record will stand for a long time and that the trajectory will remain somewhat consistent in the sense that there may have been a big jump in the world record of more than a minute this time, but that if you plot it out on a time graph, if nobody breaks this record for many years, then maybe we're not suddenly leapfrogging by a minute at a time and we're not suddenly into new territory. It doesn't necessarily follow that just because he did this that someone else is going to come along or that he can come along and do better than this in the future. This might be the end of the road in terms of new world records, at least for a while.
Yeah, you know, I've certainly, as you can guess, I've read a ton of post-marathon record commentary, and there's a mix of views, and some people, I read one piece which was quite good, saying it's the end of the world record era. We're not going to, you know, show up in Berlin each year thinking maybe they're going to break the world record this year, because we kind of know they're not going to, because it's put it out of reach. It's like Babe Ruth hitting 61 home runs or whatever it was. My sort of official prediction is that I have no idea. I really don't know. I can see a strong argument for this record being around for 20 years. I can also see I totally wouldn't be surprised if not even necessarily Kipchoge, if someone else in the next 5 years is knocking at the door. Now, part of it goes back to what I said before about what are the different ingredients that went into this. If it was the shoes, if a lot of the magic here was that there's a new shoe that makes runners faster, then we should expect other runners to be kind of knocking on the door pretty soon. If it was all about Kipchoge, then yeah, this could be a generational record. And you know, the only person who might threaten this is Kipchoge. The question being, does he have, you know, now he's the Olympic champion, he's the world record holder, he's, unimaginably rich in Kenyan terms. So, you know, making more money is totally irrelevant to him. He may still have the internal fire that's burning, but whether he can mount another supreme performance like that in the next, say, year and a half before the Tokyo Olympics will be an interesting thing to follow.
Yeah, and the fact that you and I and all kinds of other observers can't predict whether this is going to be the world record or whether it can be broken again soon or it's going to take a long time, that's what makes this so much fun and so much so entertaining to watch. So it is going to be interesting to see over the years ahead. Alex, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts on this. You're the first person I thought of after the record was broken. I wanted to hear what you had to say about it. So thanks for your time.
Thanks, Mark. It was definitely a ton of fun to watch. It was worth waking up in the wee hours of the morning to watch it live. And it's fun to have a chance to reflect on it.
All right. Super. Thanks, Alex.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.
That's author and blogger Alex Hutchinson. His latest book is Endure, Mind, Body, and the Curiously Elastic Limits of Human Performance. Coming up next, the powerful story of why one runner will be doing next week's Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon dressed as a battery. The Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon is coming on October 21st. Your spot is still available in the 5K, half marathon, or marathon. Join thousands of other runners and race against some of the best in the world, including iRun contributors Reed Coolset and Krista Duchesne. Visit iRun at our booth at the STWM Expo and join one of the best running events in the world. Blaine Penny is the CEO of Mito Canada, which raises awareness and money for research into mitochondrial disease. He is also an incredible endurance athlete who has set some world records. And he's going after another one in Toronto next weekend. Blaine, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Let's start with the story of your son, which is how you came to be on the board of Mito Canada and now the CEO. Tell us about your son.
Yeah, it's unfortunately a tragic situation. Going back about 10 years ago when he was four, perfectly normal, typical kid running around and then literally got sick one day with what we thought was appendicitis and went in for surgery and unfortunately didn't wake up from surgery, suffered a severe brain injury, and a year later we got a diagnosis of mitochondrial disease that left him a quadriplegic and he's nonverbal and now tube-fed.
And how old is he now?
He's 14.
Okay.
He's a big lad.
Yeah, and it took a year for you to understand what had happened? That long, really?
Yeah, he was initially diagnosed with a neurological disease. They knew he had suffered some severe severe injury to the brain, but just weren't sure what was causing that. And from his initial diagnosis, he was supposed to get better. There was a 90% prognosis that he would fully recover. And unfortunately, he started developing seizures, literally seizing hundreds of times a day, and his health was deteriorating. He was very unstable. So it's clear there's something else going on, and likely something genetic underlying this whole situation that was causing it. So, yeah, it was a long process of Evan just being stable enough to do some invasive surgery or testing to be able to better understand what was happening. And then it took about a year before, a combination of different types of testing that we got the diagnosis of a probable mitochondrial disease.
And of course, like most people at that time, you probably knew very little about mitochondrial disease, right?
I had never heard of it, to be honest. So we turned to Dr. Google and we learned from there, basically.
So how has this changed your life, and how has it led you to the work that you've done and now some of this running that you've done as a member of Team Mito Canada?
It changed my whole perspective on life, on parenting, on what was important in life, the importance of the here and the now. And, it's the reminder that we had of Evan getting sick, that there's no guarantees in life. We don't know what's around the corner. So those are sort of the immediate things. And then, there is a real helpless feeling that I think anyone as a parent would do anything for their children. And when you watch a child suffer like Evan has suffered and what he's gone through, that sense of helplessness, you feel like you anything you can do just helps at the end of the day to feel like you're doing everything you can. So, being involved with helping start Mito Canada, and more recently now this is my full-time job, is running the foundation, is really, I guess, become a sense of purpose and meaning in life that, it's about family and it's about making a difference. And I feel like there's, this is a big problem we need to solve to help people like Evan and others that are affected by this disease.
Now, you are not just a runner, but quite an endurance athlete. You've done some 24-hour events. You've done some world record-setting events. Tell me about some of the records you've set.
Yeah. It's actually been a fun way to engage our running community to raise awareness and raise funds for Mito Canada and mitochondrial disease. But yeah, so it all started back in 2013 at the Calgary Marathon. We had the opportunity there to, as one of the featured charities, to attempt a Guinness World Record for the fastest marathon by a linked team. And so we tied 10 people together and ran a marathon in 2 hours and I think 55 minutes. And that was a blast. We got some great media out of that. And then, one thing led to another. And along comes a friend of mine, Dave Proctor, who wanted to run on the treadmill for 24 hours. And we came up with 6 Guinness World Records to attempt on a treadmill, and were successful. So I was part of a 12 person team that ran for 24 hours as a relay. And then in 2017, last year, we attempted a big one and were successful for Canada's 150th, where we completed the Guinness World Record for the most linked runners to complete a half marathon and full marathon by linking 112 runners together and running a full marathon. So it's been quite the journey with the records.
So let's talk about what you're doing now at the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. You're going to be running the race dressed as a battery and trying to set a world record for that. How did this come about?
Well, it started with, it was probably about a year ago, my wife, Sarah, said, hey, we should go run the Toronto Marathon. So we've been planning to go down to run the marathon for some time. And then initially I was like, do I want to just run this as a regular marathon? Or, and I was browsing through the website on the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, and they had a list of all the Guinness World Records. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll just check and see if there's anything interesting there that would stand out, and as a way to raise awareness for mitochondrial disease. So I thought, well, my initial thought was batteries. The mitochondria is like the batteries of our cells, and I thought it was a really good analogy and a simple way to help people understand the role of the mitochondria. And so I didn't see a record for the battery, but I thought, okay, some of the records we had done before, we had established new records. So all you have to do is just go submit a new application to Guinness, which I did, and they approved it. So, so that's kind of how it all unfolded. And yeah, I just really wanted to use it as a way to leverage, like I said, the opportunity to make that simple connection that, the mitochondria is the battery of ourselves.
So tell me about the costume that you'll be wearing for the marathon.
Yeah, so the costume is a little fun little project, and I was trying to think, how do we put together a costume? So I went onto the Amazon website, and I searched for a battered costume, and nothing came even close to kind of what I had envisioned. And we had one of our summer students kind of mock up a design, and I really liked the design that Alex had put together. And I thought, okay, what's the closest thing? So I thought of like a Mountain Dew can, because it's cylindrical. It's got the color green, which is our color. And I found one, so I ordered that, and then we printed off. We finished the design, the costume, and printed at our local print shop, where we print all of our brochures and everything. And my friend Astrid, who's quite the seamstress, helped sew it all together and make it look sharp. So it was, it was quite the craft project, I have to admit.
Now, what is your goal for the race? And obviously, nobody's ever done this before, so whatever you do will be the world record. So what do you have in mind?
Well, so Guinness does set a bar, and the bar that they've set is I need to run quicker than a 4-hour marathon.
Okay.
So I'm hoping I can do that, barring any injuries or any other issues. But I'm hoping to run under 3 hours is my goal. So
okay.
I want to give it my all and in true Mito energy form and just kind of put it all out there. So I'm gonna give that a whirl.
Okay. Well, good luck. Now, if there was one message you could leave with people about why you're doing this and about the time that you and others put into Team Mito Canada and what inspires you to do that and what we need to know about mitochondrial disease, what would it be?
It's, one is it's as common as cystic fibrosis. It affects about 1 in 4,000 people, but it's extremely challenging to diagnose. So that's one of the really important reasons we want to raise awareness, is that a lot of people that are out there, it's estimated 90% of people have the disease, but don't even know it. So so that's an important piece of just understanding the complexity of it. And if people are developing symptoms, to talk to the doctor and ask for a referral to a metabolic specialist. And then the second thing I would say is, mitochondrial dysfunction is considered a secondary cause of many chronic diseases. So, mitochondria is what produces our energy. So when it doesn't function properly, there's a lot of problems happen downstream. So more and more research is indicating that mitochondrial dysfunction is likely the root of many diseases.
Wow.
Such as neurodegenerative diseases like ALS, Parkinson's, to some cancers, diabetes, autism, that type of thing. So I think it's something we're going to hear a lot more about in the future, and it makes sense because it's what produces the energy that we need to sustain life.
I'm sure we will learn more about it because of the research that your organization is raising money to fund. Blaine, really great to talk to you. Congratulations on all you've done, and good luck in the marathon running as a battery. Best of luck to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
That's Blaine Penny, who will be running the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon next weekend. He's the CEO of Mito Canada. Good luck to everyone who's doing Toronto next weekend. Hope it goes well for you. Coming up in the weeks ahead on iRun Radio, Olympic marathoner Reid Coolset, who is on the cover of the latest issue of iRun, another Olympian, Sage Watson, and we're going to talk about the Philadelphia Marathon with a runner who has participated in it every single year. I hope you can be with us for the next edition of iRun Radio. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.